It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Whether they went missing a few days ago or a few decades ago, their family and friends haven't stopped looking. They haven't stopped holding on to hope that a loved one will be found. But is their case in the media's eye? Think press conferences, local, perhaps national and international press following each new development. Those chances are very slim, especially for people of color. We're looking at the disparity in media coverage for missing people of color compared to their white counterparts, and your perspectives are welcome. 800-642-1234. Are you a relative or a friend of someone who went missing, but they didn't get much or perhaps any media coverage? Tell us about that. Are media outlets catering to their audiences in focusing on certain cases, or are news consumers driving the focus toward what's called missing white woman syndrome? Let's talk about it at 800-642-1234. Zach Summers is a law and science fellow at Northwestern University who studies crime. He published the study Missing White Woman Syndrome, an empirical analysis of race and gender disparities in online news coverage of missing persons. Zach, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, the way the media covered Jamie Kloss's disappearance and the way that consumers in Wisconsin, news consumers and across the nation consumed her story, has been associated with what we call missing white woman syndrome. You've researched whether there was any merit to this. Can you first tell us what is missing white woman syndrome?
Sure. So missing white woman syndrome is the idea that the amount of news coverage that a missing persons case receives is dependent upon the demographic characteristics of the individual that has gone missing. And the specific idea is that young white girls or young white women are disproportionately likely to receive any news coverage at all, and also a lot of news coverage within that segment of the missing persons population that receives any news coverage.
So what did you find out? Is there any merit to this?
There is. So I was surprised at the outset when I first started doing the research and looking into things that there had been a lot of discussion on the topic, but relatively little empirical analysis. And so when I underwent the empirical analysis, I found exactly what we would expect, which is that there's sort of a two-stage level of disparity here, in that young white women and young white girls are more likely to receive any news coverage at all, and then also more likely to receive the high-intensity amount of news coverage that a case like Jamie Kloss has received.
When you looked at the level of coverage that certain missing persons received, you focused on internet news rather than TV or newspapers. What did internet news tell you that TVs or newspapers couldn't?
The main motivation behind looking at internet news was that that is the medium that most people in America these days get their news from. And many of the classic studies on crime and the intersection of crime and news media in the past have focused on newspapers or TV studies. And internet news is a little bit messier. It's a little bit more difficult to deal with from an empirical standpoint. But I thought extending the literature into that area was something that was sorely needed in a way to bring that literature more up to date.
What about social media visibility and shares? Isn't social media supposed to be the great equalizer?
Yeah, I think in some ways it can be. In some ways it provides access to individuals and a microphone to individuals who otherwise wouldn't have a voice. But in some ways, and we need more data on this, but in some ways social media actually might just exacerbate differences, because the people who can weaponize, for lack of a better term, social media to their benefit and reach more eyeballs are people who already have certain characteristics that are going to benefit them in terms of searches for missing persons or investigation outcomes.
So how does missing white woman syndrome distort reality? In other words, what do the numbers look like? Are there actually more white women who go missing than members of other demographic groups?
Disproportionately, there are actually fewer. There are more white individuals who go missing than any other racial group in the United States, but that's more a function of the fact that there are more white people in the United States than any other race group. They actually, though, by proportion, are fewer white individuals who go missing than we would expect. And from a gender perspective, there actually are more, slightly more boys and men who go missing as compared to girls and women. And in my study, what I found was that, for example, looking at coverage intensity, about half of the news stories across the four websites that I looked at were concentrating on missing white girls and missing white women in particular, which is a significantly disproportionate share when you compare it to the rate at which that group goes missing.
We're talking with Northwestern University Law and Science Fellow Zach Summers about a documented tendency by the news media to cover the missing person cases and abductions of white women, white girls, far more than boys, poor children, children of color. Gathering your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. Is this about privilege and class? Is this about race? Where do you see the disparities and what cases media focus on and why? The number is 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Zach, how do news consumers factor into this coverage gap between white women and other segments of the population? Are they part of this, driving the news direction here?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that the phenomenon is reflective of some broader trends in our society writ large. But I think that when you drill down into that, it's reflective of both practices on the news production side, but also on the news consumption side. And at the end of the day, many news organizations are for-profit businesses, and they're driven by metrics such as page views and general readership, things like that. And if their metrics are telling them that cases about young white girls or young white women are getting more page clicks, then that's going to drive future behavior in that context.
But all news consumers aren't white, so can we really see that this phenomenon is due to that?
Yeah, I think that it's reflective of some of our broader norms in society. And I think that we see white individuals overrepresented in a variety of different areas, whether it's entertainment or news coverage. And I think it's just a function of the fact that we are very comfortable with representations of white individuals in certain contexts. And as victims of crime, I think that is one category where that is cognitively easy for news consumers to see a white individual who's gone missing and be able to relate to that person.
And in your research, not only did you find that white women were more likely to be subject of news coverage than others, but you also noticed that they were covered more intensely than others. Can you tell us what that intensity looks like and why that is significant?
Sure. So this distinction is putting a name to the differences that we see in terms of the initial threshold decision of whether a case gets covered at all, and then the subsequent decision of, okay, we've covered this case once. Do we want to return to it as a news organization and cover it again, or maybe again about 20 times? And I think the distinction is important because there's fundamentally a difference between a case that receives, say, one or two news stories about it versus one like Jamie Kloss or any of the other number of missing persons cases that have received dozens or hundreds or thousands of news stories about them. And it's a different level of pressure that it provides on police departments. It's a different level of national awareness about a case. And so just looking at that threshold issue of whether a case receives any coverage at all can actually paint somewhat of an incomplete picture.
Media apply pressure to police departments. They're looking for new developments, new answers. Is that pushing a case forward?
Intuitively, it certainly makes sense that it is. We don't have enough of an empirical basis to make any conclusive claims about this yet. It's actually an issue that I'm working on as a follow-up to the initial study. But intuitively, we know that police departments, they have PR departments. They use news media themselves to further investigations. So it makes sense from a logical perspective that they would react dynamically to cases with differing levels of news coverage. And in that sense, a case like Jamie Kloss's that receives so much attention on a national scale, a police department certainly would want to, you would think, solve that case, maybe dedicate more resources to it. But again, the empirics here are relatively limited and we can't say anything too definitive about it.
When you look at coverage, and there's also the thing of media feeding frenzies, where one newslet covers it and then another news outlet says, we got to cover this, and then it just spirals from there. Is that part of this?
Yeah, I think that is, and that again proves somewhat difficult to measure in terms of the motivations behind newsroom editorial decisions. But I think once a case starts getting a little bit of coverage on a national scale, it kind of balloons beyond the local or regional level. I think there's then starts to be somewhat of a copycat effect, and you start to see other regional sources or sources from across the country or national sources jump in and say, hey, you know, this coverage getting cases, getting some attention out west, maybe we should be covering it as well.
Research published last month in the journal PLOS One looked at racial and gender differences in missing children's recovery. As part of their work, the researchers said that the chances for media coverage of cases are, quote, highly unequally distributed. Certain famous incidents receive national and even international attention, while others entirely ignored. We're looking at why this is with Zach Summers. He's a law and science fellow at Northwestern University who studies crime. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think white women tend to get more media attention than other parts of the population? And what do you think should be done about this? Call in, email ideas, WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about missing persons on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Who grabs media attention and who doesn't? How does race and gender factor into the headlines and news graphics and social media shares? Looking back through the years, in 1996, it was JonBenet Ramsey. In 2002, it was Elizabeth Smart. 2005, Natalie Holloway. 2018, Jamie Kloss. They became household names after their cases made headlines for months, some even years. Why do you think that these cases developed like they did? Do you think the disparity in coverage between white people and people of color is something that news outlets should be blamed for, or are news consumers driving that bias? Perhaps it's both. The number is 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Zach Summers stays with us. He's a law and science fellow at Northwestern University who studies crime. Zach, the study you published starts with you laying out the stories of two different people, Aaron Hubbard, a 17-year-old African-American high school student from Chicago, and Hannah Anderson, a white teenager from California. Can you tell us a bit about them and what you were looking for here?
Sure. So as you mentioned, they were both teenagers who unfortunately went missing in calendar year 2013. And there were a lot of similarities about their cases. Aaron was 17 at the time of his disappearance. Hannah was 16 at the time of hers. They both were abducted and missing for about a week. There were searches and investigations leading into their disappearances. And that, unfortunately, is about where the cases, the similarities across the two cases end. Hannah's case ended on a much happier note. She was recovered safely, and her captor was killed by law enforcement. Aaron was unfortunately found a week later with fatal gunshot wounds. And the reason that I think their cases are noteworthy is that they're emblematic, potentially, of missing white woman syndrome. While we have to be careful about overgeneralizing with any specific individual case, I think there's a pretty striking difference here that may be due simply to the fact that these were different individuals with different demographics. As you said, Aaron was a young black man, Hannah was a young white woman. That might be the reason why there was such a dramatic difference in news coverage across these two cases, because Hannah's case received national news coverage, created a media firestorm. Almost no one heard about Aaron Hubbard's case. It received just one or two short stray news stories in local Chicago papers.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Kristen joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. My question is how the circumstances of these missing people, whoever, women or men, children, whatever the situation, how that is factored into this study.
You say circumstances, what do you mean?
I mean, the situation with Jamie Kloss, it just, you know, there was a public safety element to it, so it would make sense that it would get more media coverage, whereas if somebody just, you know, say runs away from home or, you know, goes missing for another reason, might not be a public, safety issue.
Yeah. Zach, how does public safety threat factor into this?
I think it's in a given individual case, it's highly relevant. I think with Jamie Kloss in her case, obviously the tragic circumstances of her disappearance and what had happened with her family was likely played a major role in the decision to cover that case. With respect to my study, the rationale kind of method of dealing with this is that on the whole, when you look at all missing persons cases, those differences will tend to even out across races. So there's no reason necessarily for us to think that young white women or young white girls are disappearing at rates, greater rates in suspicious circumstances or being abducted at higher rates. And in fact, we have some data to support the fact that that's not the case. And so when we look at all of the individuals across the U.S. who are going missing and looking at a sample size that large, we can assume that any dramatic differences we're seeing across race or gender disparities are due to things other than necessarily the case circumstances and how the person went missing.
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, they tell us just 17% of children missing from Wisconsin are considered lost, injured, or otherwise missing. Many are considered family abductions, but the majority of the time they're classified as runaways. First of all, does the term runaway elicit preconceived ideas?
I think it certainly does. And I think when we label a missing child as a runaway, there's less of a sense of urgency to find that child. We don't have quite the same emotional or urgent response as opposed to someone who's been abducted, especially someone who's been abducted by a stranger. And there's also some anecdotal evidence and some limited research into racially disproportionate use of the word runaway, that if we have, say, a young black girl or a young black man, they are more likely to be labeled as runaways as opposed to their white counterparts, which then can lead to a chain of events that leads to all sorts of different outcomes in the investigation.
How do the circumstances of someone's disappearance affect the way we as news consumers internalize the situation? How do these classifications affect the way law enforcement handles it?
Yeah, I think with respect to law enforcement, often law enforcement are playing a major role in these classifications. And again, there's going to be likely a lesser sense of urgency on law enforcement's behalf to solve a case that's been labeled as a runaway, as opposed to someone who's been labeled as abducted or missing under suspicious circumstances. With respect to the newsworthiness and news consumers, we're more captivated by someone who's missing not of their own accord, by someone who's been abducted, as opposed to someone who's just left home or run away. And so in that sense, it ties back into the old maxim, which certainly seems to be true. If it bleeds, it leads. And if it's criminally related, if there's something a little bit dangerous about the situation, it seems to be considered more newsworthy and something that news consumers are more interested in.
Okay, I want to throw at you a few different factors that perhaps may contribute to disparities. Affluent middle-class family with connections, someone standing in a community, how much they're interconnected into the community, how many people know them, and the picture that is put out there about the missing person. How do these things factor in?
I certainly think they're relevant. I think especially in dealing with any issue relating to crime and news coverage and race, race and class often are highly correlated with one another. So I try to control a little bit for this in my analysis, in the statistical analysis that I conduct, and don't find much of an effect of general kind of macro level economic factors of the area in which the person went missing. But I think it's certainly logical that a person with more means and more people with influence who are concerned about their disappearance are going to be able to pull those levers and influence news coverage and maybe get their story out there better than other families or other individuals can.
Talking with Zach Summers, he's a law and science fellow at Northwestern University who studies crime. Still time for you in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Zach, no one knows exactly how many Native American girls and women are missing or murdered. And that's a big gap there, a big issue. But you don't see their stories in the headlines very much. What can your research tell us about how coverage varies among non-white ethnic groups?
It's a difficult question to answer, in large part because they are so infrequently covered. So I did look for distinctions across different non-white racial groups, and in particular with Native Americans, there are just so few of them covered, and they are such a small population group that it's hard to draw any definitive conclusions. It's a question that has received and is starting to receive more news coverage and more attention from academics, which I think is a positive development. It's also a question that has been addressed in an international context, with Aboriginal individuals going missing in Canada, for example, receiving some attention from scholars. But we, at this point, know sadly very little and can say very little other than to pretty confidently say these cases of Native American missing individuals receive far less attention from police organizations and news organizations, it seems. But again, we need more empirical basis for that claim to say anything more definitive.
Well, we know what the research tells us. What is the solution here? What would you put out there?
There are a couple solutions. I think from the news production side of things, news organizations could be more cognizant of these types of disparities. They could keep internal metrics, for example, of the types of individuals in the cases that they are covering. Maybe more practically, just ensuring that we have a diversity of voices in the newsroom would be very helpful. Having more women and people of color being involved in editorial decisions could result in more proportional coverage of these types of cases. From a news consumer perspective, I think a couple of things that can be done are being cognizant and conscientious of where you get your news from, trying to get your news from an organization that is a little bit more aware of these types of issues. Secondarily, there are some nonprofits that do great work in this area, whether it's the Black and Missing Foundation or the Center for Media Justice. Their support, supporting them, giving them, learning about them, maybe making a donation, I think is also a great way to potentially help ease the disparities that we see in this sphere.
Where does your research go from here?
As I mentioned, I am interested in working on trying to figure out if these disparities in coverage lead to differential outcomes in police investigations. And that's sort of the next step, because I think that would provide some tangible evidence of a concrete effect of these disparities in news coverage in a way that goes beyond the kind of abstract violation of the notion of justice that we have to this point, and would give us a little bit something more specific that we could say, hey, here's a consequence of this disparity and why it's even more important than we already thought it was.
Zach, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Zach Summers is a law and science fellow at Northwestern University who studies crime. He published the study Missing White Woman Syndrome, an empirical analysis of race and gender disparities in online news coverage of missing persons. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.